This week's mailbag comes from our own Monique in Indiana. She writes, I started my professional organizing business 5 years ago by searching the internet for information about how to run my business. I stumbled across Lisa Woodruff and was so inspired by her enthusiasm, encouragement, and exuberance that when she offered the Sunday Basket Bootcamp 2.0 and Mastermind program last year, I knew that I had to be part of this program. This program was so much more than a training program for organizers. It was a way that changed my mindset about how I thought about my business. Lisa is an amazing teacher. She teaches to all the learning styles, and that is something that has helped me in working with my clients. I am so grateful that she has invested in Organize 365 and developed the Sunday Basket, binders, and the paper organization system. These are the things that I love to invest my time and energy with when I work with clients. Being a part of Lisa's training programs and Organize 365 has allowed me to be a part of helping people change their lives. Lisa, you are an inspiration to me, and I'm so very grateful for being part of your programs and learning from you. You have taught me to grow and believe in myself. Thanks so much, Monique. Do you have an Organize 365 success story? We'd love to hear about it. Send us an email at lisa@organize365.com and let us know how you've changed your life and your home with Organize 365.
Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Today on the podcast, I am interviewing Angela Watson, and oh my goodness, do we have an amazingly awesome talk prepared for you guys. Angela Watson has been blogging since 2003, and the name of her website is The Cornerstone for Teachers. She also has a top-ranked iTunes podcast called Truth for Teachers and a club called the 40-Hour Workweek for Teachers. We have an amazing conversation here. Angela and I both talk about our past as teachers and our blogs and our podcasts and how we help women in general live a more productive and organized life. Angela, thank you so much for joining us on the Organize 365 podcast. Angela, welcome to the Organize 365 podcast.
Hey there, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me.
I am super excited to dive into this podcast interview. You and I both have podcasts, and neither of us do very many interviews, but I think this is going to be awesome for the Organize 365 community, as I know many of them are active teachers, and you and I are former teachers, so we're going to kind of talk about that teacher-home balance. Does that sound good to you?
Yes, very excited.
Okay, so you taught for 11 years, and while you were teaching, you started Cornerstone for Teachers. So can you kind of go over like what grades you taught and why you started Cornerstone for Teachers?
Sure. So I have taught pre-K through third. I'm an early childhood person. And when I started teaching in 1999, and there just weren't a lot of resources out there for teachers. We just couldn't see into each other's classrooms. We didn't know what each other was teaching. And so I would always go on these message board forums. That was sort of the best that we had at that point. And I would just kind of share the things that I was doing and answer teachers' questions about routines and things like that. So I found that I was answering the same questions over and over again. And I realized I'm going to have a way to sort of document all of these answers in one spot. I'm going to have to sort of teach myself how to code here and develop a website so I can just link to these answers over and over again. And that's what I started doing. So I began my website in 2003, and I've been blogging there ever since then. And it just continues to grow. And one of the things that people ask me all the time is like, don't you ever run out of ideas? Don't you ever run out of things to blog about after all these years? And I really don't, because I feel like there's always new problems in education. There's always new things happening that teachers have to adapt to and change with the times. So as long as teachers still have problems for me to solve, I will still have things to write about. So I'm still going all these years later.
Yeah, that's so funny. I was deep into those message boards in like 2001, 2002 to 2004. My kids had food sensitivities for gluten and casein, and they were babies. Like, we didn't really know what their true diagnoses would be, but I was into all these like supplements and totally did all those crazy diets and everything. And I remember spending like hours, like probably 4 or 5 hours a day on those message boards reading every single one. So I completely remember that. And that's kind of how I started the Professional Organizers Think Tank Facebook group and why I recorded that 31 episode podcast was because in that free Facebook group, people come in there and they ask the exact same questions all the time. I was like, okay, I'm just going to record a quick podcast that just has, you know, 30 episodes answering each of these questions more at length instead of just giving little snippets here and there on Facebook. So I totally understand why you set it up that way. So you had Cornerstone for Teachers as a blog. I started mine as a blog as well. In 2008, I started a blog about all those diets and everything I did that I let go. And then in 2012, I started Organize 365. So you started in 2003. Kind of tell me what happened between then and now, the progression of your blog.
You know, everything just sort of evolved naturally. I just really tried to listen to what teachers said they wanted from me and make it. And once I had started to develop my website, they were saying, oh, you should write a book. So I wrote a book and I did it while I was still in the classroom. It's a classroom management book and it just had photos of the way I did things in my classroom and my forms and that sort of thing. And then from there, I went on to write more books. I'm actually working on book number 5. Now I started doing speaking because I was getting a lot of professional development requests and people wanting me to come to their schools and work with teachers. So I started moving into that realm and things just kind of grew from there. I started developing printable resources, courses, just as the internet changed and my ability to offer new things to teachers changed, it has all just kind of grown from there.
Yeah, it's so funny. And things are changing faster and faster on the internet. Like, I feel like half of my job is just figuring out how I'm supposed to be delivering this content. It's like the content hasn't necessarily changed. It's just how I'm delivering it. Now, Yes. Okay, so you taught pre-K to third grade. I taught 4-year-olds all the way up to 8th grade, and I've taught in all kinds of different school systems as well. But your information is not preschool specific anymore, right?
That's right. When I first started, I was just talking about classroom management. It was definitely specific to elementary. But since then, I've realized that there's a lot more to what teachers need to know. And I can give you ideas for your routines and procedures all day long. But if you don't have the mindset that it's going to enable you to really find the most efficient, effective way to run your classroom, it's not going to come together for you. And you're not going to be able to make these ideas your own. Because I think with teaching, it's partially a science, but a lot of it is an art. And you really have to know yourself and what works for you. You have to know your students and be able to tweak the ideas that you hear from other people. And I don't think there's one right way to do it. So if I can try to help teachers learn how to think about their work and also think about their work-life balance, then I feel like they can make those decisions for themselves. So in the very beginning, I was really zoomed in on this one specific aspect. And I feel like I've sort of gotten broader and broader and broader.
Yeah, you know, I found the same thing when I did the Professional Organizer Think Tank podcast. I would say to ladies all the time, listen, you know how to organize. Just like teachers know how to teach. This is not the thing you need to learn. For professional organizers, it's how to market and grow an actual business. Like, they don't know business. For teachers, it's classroom management and paper management and work-life balance and productivity. It's not how to teach. Like, they went to college for that. They know how to teach. It's all of these other soft skills that go along with it. Just like organizing your house. Well, there are things I can teach you about organizing your house, but I'm not going to tell you how to parent or how often you should clean or what your cleaning cycle should be. Like, that's, you already know what you want your level of cleanliness and parenting to be for your family. I'm just here to help you with like the mechanics of all the other things to give you more time so that you can go out and do the thing you were uniquely created to do, to parent, to be a homemaker, to, you know, be a teacher. And I think that was that kind of what you were thinking when you came up with the 40-hour teacher club?
Yes. That was something else that just sort of evolved naturally too, because I felt like I had written about so many different types of solutions for teachers. And there was one thing that teachers kept asking me about over and over again, and I didn't know what to tell them. And that was, you know, how do I stop bringing so much work home? How do I stop thinking about work all the time? You know, my evenings and weekends, even if I'm not grading papers, I'm still thinking about students. And I feel like anytime I'm giving to my students, I'm neglecting my own home and family. And when I'm giving to my own home and family, I feel like I'm neglecting my students and just constantly being pulled back and forth. So that was really my goal when I started creating the 40-Hour Teacher Workweek Club, was to come up with a solution to help teachers really focus on the things that matter and let go of the rest. And I thought it was going to be a book initially. And then I realized this is way too much for a book. If this isn't a book, no one is going to read this whole thing. And a lot of what I needed to provide, it was videos and printables and that sort of thing. So it really was better as an online course. And that's how I ended up making it. But that's really my goal for teachers, is to really think about what matters most in their personal life and in their instruction, in their work. What is the most important things, and how can we focus more on that and let go of some of this pressure that we're feeling to try to do all the things and do them all perfectly?
So how long ago did you start the 40-Hour Teacher Work Club?
That was in 2015.
Okay, so kind of recently.
Yes.
In the scheme of things.
Yes, for about 3 years.
Even though it's 2003. Okay, that's about when I started the 100-Day Home Organization Program too. I find that as I meet other online influencers and bloggers and podcasters, we kind of like have these similarities as all of our ideas develop. Same thing. So the 100-Day Program, people are like, okay, well, tell me exactly what to do. And it morphed and changed. And I thought it would be a book too. Like, my people wanted it to be a book. I was like, oh my gosh, this would be the most boring, longest book ever.
Yes.
Needs video, needs community, needs all of that into what I have today. So can you kind of tell us, like, how did it start in 2015? And like, if people were to sign up now, how would it be now?
I was really, really nervous when I first launched it. Because I just didn't know how people were going to respond to it. I mean, first of all, I thought I had the hardest time naming it. And you couldn't ask anyone who was good friends with me at that time. I drove them nuts going back and forth on whether or not this was the right name or not, because I felt like, you know, I didn't want to give people the wrong impression. It's not really about working 40 hours, you know, but like, each person choose your own target number that's realistic for you and adjust it each week according to your workload club didn't have quite the same ring to it. And I had to pick something. And I floated out some different ideas to people, and nothing, you know, like the Work-Life Balance Club or something like that. And nothing was catchy. And what I really needed was something to stop teachers in their tracks and make them think, wait a second, how many hours am I really working?
Right.
How many hours are they working? Time?
Like, do you know how many hours have they working?
So the average member, when they join the club, works around 63 hours a week.
Wow.
And that's average. So that means there's quite a few who are, you know, working 78-hour weeks. Mm-hmm. After they complete the program, the average is 51.
Wow. So that is huge.
It's a huge, huge difference. So we're talking about like a savings of over 500 hours a year. It's very significant. It's more than 10 hours a week is the average difference. So even if you're not getting down to 40, that's a tremendous reduction in your work hours. And more importantly, it's really helping them feel like they're better teachers, because they're letting go of some of these outdated things they're doing, some of the stuff that they've just done because everyone else in their school was doing it that way, or that's the way they've always done it. But it really wasn't working for them and their students. And when you go through the club, you learn to think with a lot of intentionality about everything you do. Everything is examined. You know, I've heard you, Lisa, talk about how you are a questioner according to Gretchen Rubin's four tendencies. I'm a questioner. Oh, and so yeah. If you're not a questioner, that's okay. I will teach you how to be a questioner.
I will totally question for you. And then you'll be like, wow, they must be exhausted with all the questioning that they do.
Right. And what's crazy is it's actually energizing to ask those questions for us, right?
Right. Oh, totally.
So I'm teaching them how to ask the questions, and sometimes just giving them the questions so they can just ask it themselves. If that's not your natural tendency, I'll help you sort of think of ways to be more intentional about what you're doing and make the right decisions for you. Because again, there's no one right way, and there's nothing that's going to work in every school for every teaching context. Some jobs are just much more demanding than others, and that's just sort of a fact. But if you can really think about what makes the most sense, what is really efficient and effective and enjoyable for you and your students and your family, what's working for you, then you're miles ahead of the game, because you're making these decisions consciously instead of just going along with the status quo.
Well, okay. So you brought up Gretchen Rubin's book, which the majority of people are obligers. And yes. I would think the majority of teachers are probably obligers.
I agree.
And okay. So the whole point is, we're going to teach you something, like, and we're going to teach it as many different ways as we need to in order for the student to learn it. Then why would we, as teachers, not do everything that's assigned to us? See what I'm saying? Like, so if every single thing that's assigned to you as a teacher from college and your first job on, like, you just keep adding and adding and adding and adding to your to-do list, and you never take anything off because you want to do a great job and you want to get an A and you want to check everything off the list and this is how it's supposed to be done. Like, I don't know if this is still true, but when I started, it probably is still true. I don't get it. But we had to write lesson plans a certain way, and you had to have like the objective and then the state part of the curriculum that you were teaching, and then your procedure, and then how you're evaluating for every single thing you taught, even at four-year-old preschool. So if I was going to teach eight things that day, I had to find eight state objectives and eight, you know, evaluations all the way through. Like, it took so long to write our lesson plans. And then I was evaluated based on how complete my lesson plans were. And you had to turn in your lesson plan books three times a year. Do they still do this?
They do. And it's probably gotten worse since you and I were in the classroom in most places.
It would take so much time. And of course, I, you know, other teachers would be like, see Monday's notes or whatever. But I was like, no, it has to be done this way. And so I'm going to do it this way. And then I color coordinate it. And then, you know, the whole nine yards. Meanwhile, if you've been teaching more than 3 or 4 years, like, if they verbally asked you why you were doing what you were doing, especially if you're in the same grade, you know why you're doing what you're doing. Some of it is busy work.
Yes.
And so, but we're getting graded. Like, we're getting graded, just like the kids are getting graded. And then you have to have all the paperwork to back up everything in case this teacher or that whatever. And there's just so much. I did so much as a teacher out of, I was afraid I was going to get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Do teachers still feel like they're afraid they're going to get in trouble?
Definitely. And I think the teacher evaluation system has changed a lot in the last few years to make that even more of a fear. And that's just the worst place to be making decisions from, right? This sense of fear, this, you know, I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I don't do this. So intentionality is really looking at what do I have control over?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you mentioned, some teachers were able to just say, see notes, you know, or they were able to copy paste, or they were able to sort of take some of these shortcuts, which were perfectly fine with the school or the district, but it's our own standards that keeps us from feeling like that's okay. So learning to really question your own standards for yourself and thinking, is this really helpful? In an ideal world, I would like to have it this way. But given that I have a limited amount of time and energy, is this where I want to be spending that time and energy? What would I be saying yes to if I were to say no to this? And really figuring out those trade-offs and deciding where you want to spend your energy. And there may be times when you can't do anything about it. There are some teachers who have to fill out the lesson plan template exactly as it is. They cannot share the workload with any other teachers. They cannot copy paste. They cannot reuse things. I think there's very few who don't have any of those options available to them. But even for the sake of argument, let's say that you did. So then you know lesson planning is going to be something that takes up a lot of time for you. It's going to be even more imperative that you now examine other aspects of your work and say, okay, I have to do the lesson plans this way. I cannot change that. However, can I change the way that I'm grading? Can I change the way that I'm in communication with parents? Can I change the amount of time that I'm spending decorating my classroom? Can I have a more self-running classroom so that I'm not the only one responsible for keeping it organized? Can I transfer responsibility of running the classroom to the kids a little bit more? So really looking to see where do I have power and control and stepping into that power and owning it instead of just saying, I don't have a choice. This is how it is. And my life will always be this way because I chose to be a teacher. I think that's such a disempowering viewpoint that so many teachers just kind of fall into that trap. They just have been told from the very beginning, you're never going to make any money in this profession. You know, you're just going to have to sacrifice everything all the time for the kids. And they don't realize that there actually is a better way. You can do a great job for kids and still have a personal life as a teacher.
So, all right. What are, like, can you give us just like two examples of things that people were doing before they were in the work club and then after they were in the work club that saved them a lot of time and were simple changes that they just hadn't even considered doing before?
I think that a lot of teachers enter the club without having a good list-making system in place. Mm. And there's one that is available in the club that I think teachers have said has been a game changer for them more than anything else. And what it allows them to do is plan in advance what they want to do and when. So having set blocks of time for certain things and really examining those little blocks of time that kind of get away from you. I think that one mistake a lot of people make in general, not just teachers, but they tend to write off a small block of time and say, oh, I only have 15 minutes. And so they end up just scrolling through Instagram. You can get a lot done in 15 minutes if you have this list of tasks already ready. If you already know, if you're not just standing there thinking, what should I do? What's most important? Should I do this? Should I do that? If you already know, okay, I'm going to have a little bit of time here, or I might have a little bit of time here, and you have some things lined up, you can just plug in those tasks, and then you're not wasting time trying to plan and execute at the same time, because that's really two separate brain functions. You want to plan in advance, and then throughout the day when you know, things are just coming at you full speed and everybody needs your attention, you shouldn't be planning anymore at that point. You're just executing. You're just following through on what you said you were going to do. You're adapting as needed as new things come up, but you have this plan in place and it doesn't have to be super rigid. It doesn't have to be something that you stick to no matter what, but just kind of having a sense of how you want to be using your time and not letting those small blocks get away from you tends to make a big difference, not only in the amount of time that teachers have, but also in their stress levels. Because when you feel like you're just constantly making decisions on the fly and there's a thousand things that are undone and you don't know when any of them are going to get tackled, it makes you feel like you're always working. And when you have it written on a list and you know, okay, I've got this huge stack of papers to grade, but I'm going to do that on Thursday afternoon. I blocked off time on Thursday. So I don't have to stress out about it on Tuesday. I can relax on Tuesday and do the things that need to be done today. And each day will take care of itself.
Okay, well, we have to thank Jana because Jana emailed me and she's like, Lisa, do you know Angela Watson? Like, you should know Angela. I'm in her 40-hour teacher work club. And then Angela or Jana had heard about the teacher workbox. And she's like, okay, these two systems 100% go together. So I'm introducing this now because I totally see what Jana was talking about. Mm-hmm. I am often saying that, you know, it's just a fact, but I don't know where the original statistic originated from, but for every minute you spend planning, you save 4 to 5 in execution. So literally, if you plan out what you're going to do in that 15 minutes, it could have taken you an hour and 15 minutes to do that without planning. No joke, because if you are like, so in the teacher workbox system, we have like a folder for errands. And for us, that means like going down to the office. So if you have this little folder, there's like two things you have to copy, but then also you get somebody's permission slip you give need to give down there and somebody's check that needs to go down there. And also you remember you need to get more file folders out of the file room. Now, when you go down to the office to make a couple copies, you're also dropping off a form, money, and picking up file folders and going back within 15 minutes. But if you hadn't planned it that way in that folder and grabbed that slash pocket as you left your classroom, that would have been at least 4 different trips down to the office. And you know, every time you go down to the office, you got to talk to somebody. So it would have been over an hour. Like you would have lost an hour. And this way you can go down to the office and get all of those things done and socialize as you normally would, because like we're not going to cut out Instagram and socializing, but the to-dos all got checked off at the same time.
That's right.
Okay, this is awesome. All right, can you give us another example?
Another example of something that teachers do that has made a big difference for them. I would say probably something related to grading. Just about every teacher is spending way more time grading than they would like to. And there's a couple different approaches that I recommend through the club. And again, people just pick and choose what works for them. And as you know, productivity is just a giant experiment, right? You're just always playing around to see what's going to work. You know, something may work for a while and then stop working, you know, but just being willing to just try something different with your grading and assessment. So I encourage club members to only grade the assignments that are a true and accurate measure of what students know and are able to do. So you're not grading all the practice work. You're not grading all the group work. You're not assigning a formal grade to every single thing that students do. Most districts either have no minimum for the amount of grades you have to take, or it's something like 2 grades per subject per quarter. So in a 9-week quarter, that's maybe 18 grades for math or 18 grades for ELA or whatever it is. And some teachers are grading way more than that. They're grading something every single day for the entire 9 weeks. So just being more intentional about what you're grading and looking to see what is actually required, you know, and not just grading everything because you feel like you have to do that to be fair to students. If you're grading the things that are a true and accurate measure of what they know and what they're able to do, then you don't have to grade at all. You're just going to pick 2, maybe 3 things a week. So that can really help. Another strategy that is related to grading is something called grading stations, where you have students grade their own work. So you can, if it's something that is multiple choice or it has a defined answer, it's not open-ended, you can put the answer keys on a table in your room and put a special color pen back there, you know, so kids don't bring their pencil back and change their answers or cheat or anything like that. But when they're done, they can go back to the back table, use the special color pen. They can check their work right away, see exactly what they got right, what they got wrong, and turn it into you. So they get immediate feedback on it, and you're not the one having to grade the paper. And you don't have to do this with everything, but if you do it for one assignment a week, I mean, that can save you easily a half an hour a week right there.
Well, and also, couldn't you apply the 80-20 rule? Like, you know which kids are struggling in which subjects, and yes, which kids have everything done every time because they're little perfectionists, and which kids just tend to struggle in everything. And doing that system like you talked about, but double checking the 20% of kids that you know struggle in that subject just to make sure and to stay on top of like, okay, we weren't grading this one, but obviously this student didn't get this concept, so I'm going to pull them over here and do an extra task with them with that time that you would have spent grading all of those quizzes. So instead of grading all that homework or practice work, you're really only going to look at the 3 to 4 students that you know tend to always struggle in that subject to see if they need any remediation before the end of the day, which is what the whole purpose of the practice work is for, right?
Exactly. So you're just looking for more creative ways to try to meet that same outcome. You do know which kids are most likely struggling. So how can you, you know, use formative assessment more? How can you stay on top of what your kids know and are able to do without sitting down and grading a stack of papers and then handing back the stack the next day? The kids look at the grade, they shrug, they crumple up the paper, stick it in their backpack, never to be seen again. How can we make it more meaningful for kids and less work for teachers? And those two things tend to go hand in hand a lot more than people realize.
So have you found in this group, there's a community component, I'm sure, right? Where the teachers, yes, get to talk to each other.
That's right.
I would think that as a teacher, just hearing that everyone else is also working 50 to 70 hours a week, it's validating. Because what you hear in the media is, well, you get the whole summer off and all winter break, so you should, you know, whatever they want to fill in. And that, okay, teachers may work a lot when they work, but then they get all of this time off, which obviously is not true. But it is validating to hear from other teachers that you're not the only one that's taking all this work home and not getting it done. I used to call it my exercise program, was I would load up all the stuff and put it in the bag and take it home and then also carry it all the way into the house and then carry it all the way back. And 9 times out of 10, I did not touch anything in that bag. But that heavy bag, boy, that got carried to my car and back every single day because what if we're going to have a snow day? Or what if this? Or what if that? And so I would always bring all of this stuff home. So I just finally said it was just my exercising program, knowing that I probably wasn't going to do it.
Someone in the club called it their bag of shame.
Yeah. I didn't go that far, but yeah. And there's multiple bags. Sometimes I had 2 trips. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Yeah. I'm not going to get to all of this. But just in case all the stars align and I have 3 uninterrupted hours at home to work, I would do it. You know?
Yes. Yes, exactly. That just in case thing. And then you just feel guilty the next day because it didn't get done. Mm-hmm. So if you can be more intentional and think, okay, am I really going to have 3 hours this evening? Am I actually going to have this extra time? What am I actually going to accomplish? And only bring home that amount. And you know what? If you have extra time, you might actually be able to use it to enjoy it. have time with your family, relax a little bit instead of always trying to get ahead with work, because the work is never ending. There's no amount that you could do and then be like, okay, I'm done. It's completely done. I have done everything I could ever possibly do for my students. It will just continue. The work will continue, right, to expand to whatever amount of time you give it. So it's up to you to set that boundary and say, I'm only going to give it an hour tonight. That's it. And after that, it's family time.
So let's talk about family time, should we?
Let's do it.
Okay. So when I started teaching, I did not have children. And I did work a lot at home because I'm just a busy bee. I mean, like, I'm just always doing, I even do puzzles while I watch TV. Like, I'm always multitasking, doing something else, filling every single nook and cranny of time that I have. I sleep really well, but when I'm not sleeping, I'm working. I'm doing something. I love it. Then I was home with my kids when they were little. And then when they were in grade school, I went back to teaching full time to try to make ends meet. I made it about 18 months. I did not make it very long. But I had professionally organized for women who were teachers. And we have already established that we're probably not going to get down to 40 hours a week. We're probably still going to be working about 50 hours a week. And you're probably not including driving time, right?
Right.
Okay. So that does not leave a lot of time every week for parenting if you have kids, taking care of your house, which I've already told you the Pew Research Institute says takes 36 hours a week, which breaks out to 18 hours for women and 10 hours for men currently. That is the current way that breaks out. So just living in a house takes a lot of time, food, clothing, cleaning, all of that stuff. Then anything you want to do personal, we're out of time, like, right? Aren't we out of time? We're always out of time.
Right.
So what I found for this work-life balance, I'd always kind of done this, but I did it even more when I was a teacher, is I would focus on my house and on my parenting in the summer, and I would focus on maintenance and teaching during the school year. Have you ever thought about that or talked about that?
Yes, and that is one of the ways that what you and I both teach really aligns well, because I know you're a big fan of talking about these seasons of the year mm-hmm. and also seasons of life and working with those two things instead of constantly fighting against them. Yes, I totally agree. It's fine to get completely out of balance in one area during a certain season of the year, as well as during a certain season of life, because you can't achieve, you know, quote unquote, balance on a daily basis. It's more like a lifetime achievement to be able to look back and say, okay, I spent this certain time, maybe it was over the summer, more with my family. During August and September, I was completely focused on getting things set up for work. And that's okay to do that. I think that's a great strategy instead of trying to do something that frankly is impossible and feeling like you're trying to do everything well every single day.
Yeah. And I kind of feel guilty, or like people are going to judge me when I say that I only parent in the summer, but it's not like I don't parent during the school year, but you know, school's not easy for my kids. They have anxiety. They have ADHD. They're trying, just like every other student is in your classroom, to do as well as they can at their work, because school is their work. And so if I'm going to say, okay, I'm also going to teach my kids how to do laundry, or I mean, that would just totally put them over the edge. So anything like that, any life skills that I want my kids to have, or I always put those in the summer, and I pick 1 to 3 big things that we're really going to work on over the summer. I don't like sit them down and tell them, but I am very purposeful of like, okay, this summer, and it was finally this summer when they learned to do laundry. Let me just allay everybody's fears. If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't heard me before, my children are 17 and almost 19, and they just learned to do laundry this summer. Because when I was looking at what are the big life skills and lessons that I wanted to impart as a parent, that one never rose as high as everything else. And that was a conscious decision. I felt kind of silly saying, yeah, I'm still doing all of my kids' laundry. They don't even know how to do it when they're in high school. But there were so many other life skills that I really wanted to teach them before I taught them that. And so it's a constant prioritization in your work, in your parenting, in your home. You can't do it all. You constantly have to pick and prioritize.
That's right. And that means that some things which are important are just not going to get done right away. And that has to be okay with you. You cannot focus on everything all at once, because then you just feel overwhelmed and you end up not really doing any of those things well. So I love that you just, you know, you focused on other life skills. You got those really ingrained in your kids and had them, you know, really feeling comfortable with them, and then introduce the next thing instead of feeling like you needed to be on this artificial timeline where, oh, everyone else's kids are already doing this. I need to hurry up and do it too. You really have to think about what's intentional for your family, what's going to be best for you. I think that's great.
Yeah. I think that's totally what your 40-hour teacher work club does all along the way. Not just doing the next thing on the checklist or something someone told you to do, but really thinking about, does this need to be done? Does it need to be done by me? Does it need to be done now? You know, and to what level does it need to be done? We're so busy trying to get the A. Not everything needs to be A work. It really doesn't.
That's right.
Some things just need to get checked off the list.
That's exactly right. You can't give 110% to everything. I mean, I think a lot of us were raised where that's what you're supposed to do. Always give 100%, or maybe even more than that, maybe the full 110%, but that's physically impossible. You can't. You have to choose the things that are really worthy of your full time and attention, and be okay with giving less to the things that don't matter as much. I like that way of thinking about it, just checking it off the list. That's all we're doing, just getting it done. Doesn't have to be the best. Get it done.
Now, do you find, I'm sure you do, but I just want to give you a chance to say this. Do you find that as people cut back those extra hours and they have them available, how are they spending those extra hours?
You know, it's really interesting to see what happens. One thing that did not occur to me when I started this was that some people would be very uncomfortable actually having mm-hmm. those extra hours.
Yep.
That's where you're going with this, right? This idea that like people are like, oh my gosh, I have all these extra hours uh-huh. to myself. I've never had that before. What am I supposed to do now?
It's only so long you can scroll on Instagram.
Yes.
uh-huh. Check the email yes. again. Okay, Facebook. Okay, back to Instagram. Nope, no one's posted yet.
That's right. That's right. And then they end up just creating more work for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're like, oh, well, let me just, now I have extra time. I'll go back into work and I'll, you know, hang another bulletin board or something, or I'll make another activity. And they have to really stop and think, wait a second, I trimmed back my work and now I'm just filling it with more work. So that means there's something else going on here. There's something where I haven't had time to really step back and think about what I really want my life to look like. What is all of this for? What kind of legacy am I building here? What do I want my life to really be like? And how do I want to spend my time? And thinking about how to fill your hours purposefully instead of just, you know, trying to pack in as many things as possible or constantly staying busy so that you don't have to think about those questions.
Yeah. So I had a listener, I was talking to her and she said, you know, it's that question you always ask that I don't know how to answer. I'm like, what question do I always ask? And she goes, how I want to spend the time that I have now. Like, I don't know. I have no idea how I want to spend this time that I have now. And, you know, sitting through the uncomfortableness of that, even for me, I mean, I say it all the time. So when I joined Strategic Coach and I'm in this coaching program and they're like, you need to have these free days. And I was like, what is a free day? And why would I want one of those? Like, so I was filling up my free days with household chores. They're like, no, a free day. Like, what would you do? I was like, I don't know. I have to do, I don't know. I could not remember. I'm not a sports person. So it's not like I want to go play golf or something. I'm like, what do I like to do? I didn't remember what I liked to do. And so finally I started doing puzzles again. So now I always have a jigsaw puzzle up. That has been really fun. I put some time into my wardrobe. I have pink slash pockets in our Sunday basket for home. And then people will always say to me, okay, I have the pink slash pockets. I'm really excited about those because they're for me and I don't know what to label them. Mm-hmm. So what is it that you want to do with that time? I think often we, you know, let the time get filled up so we don't have to think about what we would do with that time that we could have. And the number one thing I think we could consider using that time for, I'm not going to say you should, but is your spouse. Like your kids usually get their needs met. You're not going to let your personal kids not get their needs met if your school kids are getting their needs met. But often it's our spouse that we're like, oh yeah, you're fine, or you can wait, or after this, after this, after this. And so some of that free time that you have, spending it with your spouse in a meaningful way, what is date night? You know, like when the kids are little, you go on date night and then the babysitter puts them to bed. But once they're school age and you start driving around for all the sporting things and all the other things, sometimes we lose date night.
Yeah, that's a really good suggestion. And I think that's really helpful also for people who have trouble, who feel maybe sort of selfish if they are focusing on their own needs. So feeling like I'm still spending this time connecting with another person and enriching another person's life, it can feel more powerful to them. I'm also thinking about a teacher who told me that, you know, she realized that her husband was always on the back burner, but that it would not be possible for her emotionally or financially to continue teaching if it weren't for him. And I thought that was a really big statement. Like, he is her rock and he is the one who helps talk her down through all of the stress of teaching. And because he makes more money, he enables her to stay in this profession that she loves, but, you know, ultimately wouldn't be enough to support their family. And so she realized, like, you know, he is so important to me. I could not do this, as much as I love my work. I could not do this without him. And I needed to prioritize him because one of my goals in life is to stay married for my entire lifetime. Yeah.
I say that all the time. That's my number one goal. Stay married for the rest. It's, you know, you laugh, but seriously, it has to be a goal, because the next thing you know, who's this person that you're living with? And, you know, Greg will often say he's an introvert, he's quiet, he's an endurance runner, like he just goes to the job, he does what he needs to do. I'm the one out here creating all these things and doing all, you know, whatever I'm doing. And he's just standing there waiting. And he's not going to say, hey, pay attention to me. Every once in a while, he'll be like, could you put the phone down? Like, I mean, and then I'm like, oh, apparently I have not been paying attention because I'm a busybody. I'm always off doing something. And a lot of these men are not going to say, hey, my turn. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I wrestled with this whole idea of free time, and when people have extra time in their calendar, is that I filled it up with the house. I filled it up with the kids. I even filled it up with date nights, but it was like the regular old, you know, go to the movies, go see a comedian, go out to dinner. Those are the three things Greg and I do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh, like if I'm going to have 12 hours a week of free time, like I can't go to that many comedians. Like, I don't know, you know, like these free days really got me all in a tizzy this summer. And so when I was talking to my coach, she said, no, you can have different kinds of free time. You can have gold level, silver level, bronze level, tin level would be doing housework. But like a gold level free day, maybe you go to the spa for a day, or maybe you go hike in nature and take a journal and map out that book you've always wanted to write, or something that's totally for you. Silver free day, maybe you and your husband go on a 2-hour drive up to the next city and explore that city or something like that. It doesn't always have to be expensive. You could do things that don't cost as much money, but they definitely are going to take time and planning. And I was like, oh, I can plan a free day? And she was like, yes. I was like, came on, like I can do. So now I've been saying to Greg, I'm like, oh, we live in Cincinnati. And I said, we should go do the Bourbon Trail, which is in Kentucky, which is only a couple hours away. And he was like, oh, I've always wanted to do that. And he sells industrial actuated valves. Really exciting. But anyway, they're selling a bunch down there. And he's like, I don't want to go until all our valves are in so I can see where all of our valves are. On our list. And we talk about every once in a while, you know, going on the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, which will be really fun. I don't know when we'll do it. It'll probably be a year from now, because I think fall would be a nice time to do that. But, you know, that's on our list. Or we live in Cincinnati, which is near this Noah's Ark. Like, they built an actual Noah's Ark. I don't know if you guys know this, but in Kentucky, they built a life-size Noah's Ark, which has animals. And my mom took my daughter down there, and I really want to go. Greg and I really want to go. And Abby wants to go with us. She wants us to take her back. So that's on our list sometime, to go down to the real, to see what Noah's Ark looked like. And that's going to be like a day long free day.
I love that you're creating this list of ideas so that when you do have the free day, you're not just spinning your wheels thinking, oh, what should we do? What should we do? Like, you've already got all these great ideas lined up, and now you can just plug them in.
It took me 6 months to come up with those two, just FYI. Before that, it was, I think I'll go to White House Black Market again. But that, it was 6 months of just shopping at White House Black Market, window shopping a lot, but then starting to buy pieces and really cultivate what my closet was going to look like. And then I took a weekend and I redid my closet. I did it myself with Home Depot stuff, but I've always wanted to do my closet. And really, what are the things that you want to do for you? Not for your kids, not for your house, not for your job. What do you want to do for you? And letting yourself dream. And as you dream, you will get more of these ideas. But you need time in order to do them. So you need to join this 40-hour teacher work club if you're a teacher, and do Sunday baskets and work boxes that we have that will help you get time. Once you know what you want to spend the time for, you're going to be much more motivated to get the time. Some of us need to find the time and then figure out what we'll do with it. Others of us know what we want to do with the time, but we need help getting the time out of our schedule. Okay, so Angela, you started a podcast. Where along the line here did you start the podcast?
I started the podcast in 2015, very beginning of 2015. And then I started the club about 6 months after that.
Me too. I started my podcast in fall of 2014. And then in January of 2015, I started the program, the 100-Day Home Organization Program. Isn't that funny?
It's so cool the way our lives have sort of like patterned after each other in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think it's true for, like, you probably watch, like I do, the online bloggers that started the ones I started watching started in 2008, 2010, 11, 12. It is amazing how similar the paths are. And I often will get an idea of something I'm going to do in my business and I'll put it in action and I'll start working on it. And then I'll find out that all these other people are doing the exact same thing. Like we all get these ideas at the same time. I love it. I think it's so cool.
It is.
Okay. So your podcast is called Truth for Teachers.
That's right.
And it's similar to Organize 365. You don't have very many interviews either, right?
Yep. It's mostly solo shows. I bring on guests sometimes. Sometimes I do coaching calls. So I'll have graduates of the 40-Hour Teacher Workweek Club come on and ask questions. And we do deep dives into productivity and balance issues and, you know, just ways to craft a more meaningful and purposeful life, basically. So I'll do some different formats like that. But mostly it's just me talking directly to the person listening, just like you do. I think that's what people tend to like the best. It's consistent. They know what to expect. And it feels like we're good friends, right? Like when you listen to someone on a podcast, totally. Like I feel like I already know you so well because I've listened to so many of your episodes.
Yes, totally.
I forget like what did you actually say to me and what did you say to all of your listeners? But you know, that's the great thing about podcasting is it's very intimate. You feel like you get to know the person and you can hear the tone in their voice. You can hear their expression. You can hear the passion in their voice. And it's just so much more, I just love it so much more than blogging because, you know, you can just skim through a blog post and you really don't get to know the person nearly as well as when you're listening to them. So I just love podcasting for that reason. I was super nervous about starting it because like most people, I don't like the sound of my own voice. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know any of the technical stuff, but I was a really avid podcast listener and I loved how close I felt to the people who podcasted. I felt like I knew them really well. Like we're besties and they don't even know it. And I'm like, I want to create that same experience. I have teachers who have been following me since 2003 and they've never heard my voice. And I don't like to do videos. So a lot of them had never even seen me.
It's not that I don't like to do video. It's just, it's a lot of work.
It's more work. You got to do the hair, the makeup, the light. No.
Yeah, I have all that stuff in the backdrop, but I don't know. I'm an audio processor. So I think that's why I like to produce audio content. And I think also we're teachers. So I know my podcast and yours is the same. We take a lesson and we teach it. Take a lesson and we teach it. And we may go into different courses or whatever, or different parts of what we want to teach you. But usually, if you're listening to Angela's podcast, if you're listening to mine, we have something we want to teach you. And we're going to give you, just like we would in the classroom, you know, ideas and stories. But in the end, you're going to end up with something actionable and takeaway because we're teachers.
That's right. That's what we do.
I love it. Okay, so you guys can find out more by going to the show notes in here or organize365.com/Angela. So you can sign up for this 40-hour teacher work club. Now, Angela, it opens and closes, right? It's not open all the time.
That's right. We have two cohorts a year. So there's one in the summer, and then there's one that is about to start in January. And we're going to have early access that's actually available now. It's available beginning December 10th. And that's for people who want to get it early. They want to get the 2018 pricing because the price will go up in 2019. So you can get in early. You can get started using the Facebook group, all the bonus resources and trainings and the list making system and that sort of thing early. If you want to do that maybe over your break when you have some time to sort of sit back and think and plan and figure out what you want to do for the new year.
Yes. So we are going to release this episode on December 14th. So that means it is open. You guys can go over and check that out. I know I always did a lot of planning for the second half of the year over winter break. I love to get my house organized and get all of my teaching stuff as organized as possible over winter break. So we wanted to be able to time that for you. So go ahead and check that out. And then also, I highly recommend you're listening to this podcast. So you probably like podcasts. And if you're a teacher, head on over to Truth for Teachers and subscribe and listen to Angela's podcast as well. And anything else that you want to have the audience go check out?
Probably the club is the best place. If you go there, you can get some free resources sent to you if you want to sort of check out sample materials, and you'll be able to learn a little bit more about how it works. I really like the January start time. I know some folks are kind of nervous about that and they think they want to wait till summer. But the thing is, summer flies by really fast. And I feel like at the beginning of the school year, you're trying to implement so many other new things right. all at once. There's so much newness that you don't really want to begin something new necessarily right away. And I love the idea of the January start because you know, a lot of times you're sort of exhausted for the last couple months of the school year. And this is a way to really finish strong and to really start experimenting now with different systems so that you can hit the ground running in the fall and not feel like you're kind of starting from scratch. So you've got these kids who already know you, already like you and trust you. You've got this rapport, you've got systems going. This is the perfect time to experiment with things and figure out new, more efficient ways of doing things. Find what works for you, find what doesn't work for you, and then you'll already know next school year. Next school year will just run so much more smoothly. So if there's anyone who's just sort of thinking, I don't know about January, I love the fresh start of a new year. You don't have to wait for a new school year. That new year, I just feel like is a really powerful time to just try out something new.
Well, yeah, the beginning of the school year, September, October, November, December, is littered with assemblies and holidays, four-day weeks, and all. I mean, it's like something is changing all of the time. But once you get to January, the days are shorter. It's colder. I'm in Ohio, so I'm always going to say it's colder. But even in Florida, it's colder. And they're usually, you've got Martin Luther King weekend and President's Day weekend. But really, you're getting into the meat of teaching. You can do bigger lessons, longer lessons, because there aren't as many vacations and holidays that are being taken. And really, the beginning of January all the way through the middle of March, that 10-week stretch, I always found that was the biggest teaching bulk of my year. Like, I could get the most taught during that time, because it wasn't like the kids were dying to get outside and go play because it was so nice outside. Like, they were comfortable being inside because it was colder outside. And like you said, they're accustomed to you and the routines, and you're not going to get all the Halloween candy. And they really can kind of hunker down and get really deep in some of those lessons. And you can do the same with your classroom.
That's right. And you can start, you know, trimming hours off of your work week right away. It's very hard to do that when you start at the beginning of the school year, because the beginning of the school year is just nuts. But in January, you can start, you know, saving really 3 to 5 hours immediately as soon as you join. And that's really powerful. I mean, you've got probably 5 to 6 months of the school year left to go. And there's no point in just sort of muddling through and hoping, you know, oh, next year I'll do something different. It's never too late to change something in your work or in your life that is not working. If you're not happy with something, start making those small baby steps now, whether you join the club or not. This is just in general. That's something that I tell teachers all the time. Don't ever wait for an artificial date when things can get better. Oh, you know, when my kids are older, this will happen. Or, right. Oh, when I retire, then I'll be able to do, you know, X, Y, and Z. Tomorrow is not promised. Like, all we have is today. And so if there's something that you know you need to be doing to take care of yourself, to have more time with your family, to prioritize your health, start doing that right away. And I think you'll find that even really small changes can add up to big results.
Well, yeah. And if you can start saving 3 to 5 hours a week right away, and up to the average of 10 that people are doing in the program by the end of this school year, those are all hours you get to spend in the summer on your family and what you want to do in your home. So yes, start sooner rather than later, for sure. Angela, thank you so much for being on the Organized 365 podcast.
Thank you, Lisa. It was so good talking with you.